maybe that sounds a little surprising, but our field is absolutely incredible. No matter what your major, your previous experience, there's going to be a room for you in our field. I'll use my experience while working at the Walt Disney World Resort. It's my first major role outside of an undergraduate school. Down in Orlando, there are 60 to 70,000 different types of jobs. Everything from human resources to engineering to maintenance to marketing to brand to folks that deal with the animals to folks that create incredible landscapes and plants. And again, traditional business fields as well, operations and HR, marketing, finance, accounting. No matter what your background is, there's a spot for you in our field. So I think that's my piece of advice for maybe folks who are not looking at hospitality and tourism as a major or a minor, but there's a field or an opportunity for you in our field.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. Today, we are thrilled to welcome a distinguished guest, Dr. Eric D. Olson, a luminary in hospitality, tourism, and service innovation. Dr. Olson stands at the forefront of academic and industry innovation, with his impressive work spanning over two decades. His expertise encompasses a broad spectrum, including services, marketing, online customer behavior, and the intricate dance of festival management and international tourism marketing. But Dr. Olson's impact extends far beyond the lecture halls and conference rooms. As an associate professor and the chair of the Rita and Navin DeMond Department of Hotel Management at the School of Hospitality at Metro State University of Denver, he is passionately dedicated to molding the next generation of hospitality and event management leaders. His commitment to education is matched by his zeal for bridging the gap between academia and industry, a testament to his roles with the Journal of Hospitality and Tourism Case Studies, the Colorado Restaurant Association and Foundation, and the Colorado Hotel and Lodging Association. His pioneering research and leadership in customer service, experience design, service failure and recovery, and LGBTQ+ tourism and events have earned him widespread acclaim. Dr. Olson's scholarly contributions to top academic journals like Tourism Management, the Annals of Tourism Research, and the Journal of Convention and Event Tourism underscore his profound impact on the field. A Fulbright scholar, Dr. Olson's international project in Hanoi, Vietnam, aimed at creating a service and experience ecosystem model for hospitality and tourism experiences, showcasing his commitment to global innovation. His academic credentials, with a PhD from the University of Central Florida, a MBA from Stetson University, and a BBA in marketing from the University of Wisconsin, complement his rich industry experiences, which include a tenure at the Walt Disney World Resort. Today, Dr. Olson joins us to share his journey, insights, and visions at the intersection of hospitality, innovation, and education. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Eric Olson to the Innovation Insights podcast. Welcome, Dr. Olson.
Yeah, thank you very much. That was a very kind and a very nice introduction. Happy to be here, and thanks for the introduction.
Eric, it's fabulous to have you here. We've known each other now for over 10 years, I think.
I believe so. That's correct. Yeah. I think when I first came to Iowa State University, it's been about 10 years now. I think that's when we started meeting and having conversations. And it's been about 10 years now.
It has. And I love working with you. It was just one of the highlights of my career. And now you're in one of the my favorite places, also my birthplace, in Denver, Colorado, and really just making an impact with the Metro State University's hospitality program there.
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah, so I was at Iowa State University for about 7 years, and I greatly miss my colleagues at the awesome Department of Apparel, Events, and Hospitality Management, and great time there and still doing some collaborations with colleagues and now graduate students that are now professors, which is one of the highlights of my career. And I've been here now at Metropolitan State University, Denver, for about almost just wrapping up the third academic year. Yeah. Greatly enjoy my time here, but I definitely miss all of my colleagues back in Iowa State University.
Well, we miss you. We miss you. As we start off, can you talk to us a little bit about your philosophy in connecting academia with industry and how you've approached this throughout your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I think my overall philosophy is that industry and academia, we have to partner, we have to collaborate with each other. I think one of the things we saw during COVID, when our industry did have a lot of innovation and also higher education had a lot of innovation, is we need to come together even more so now, this post-COVID environment. We are educators, right? We provide students with educational content and skills and that they will need in careers, right? And then industry needs us for, you know, that workforce, a pipeline. But we also need industry, I think, to help us to make sure that we're staying up to date. As industry changes, we need to make sure our curriculum stays up to date. We need to make sure that we have the most up-to-date labs. Industry is a source of inspiration for our research, and we need to come together to solve some of the most pressing challenges and opportunities, I would argue, in our industry. I was thinking a little bit about some ways and how we can do that. I might give a little shout out to the School of Hospitality here at MSU Denver. It's been about a little over 11 years where we have what's called the Hospitality Learning Center. And a one half of our academic building is the academic units. That's the labs, the classrooms. And then the other half is actually a real hotel, a Springhouse Suites hotel, 150 room. And to me, that's extremely innovative. And kudos to our board of trustees and academic leadership 12, 13, 14 years ago to have that vision. So our students have incredible experiential experiences. Have it mapped out through the course of 4 years where our students do interact with the hotel. And we do have a restaurant on site called Degree Restaurant and a meeting and event space. And then last year, we actually opened up a 2.5-barrel brewing lab system. It's a working brewery, and it's absolutely incredible. It's a great example of where our industry came together to help us, guide us, provide some of the financial support. And our students are now actually producing their own beer and other non-alcoholic beverages. And we're selling that beer actually at our restaurant as well. So it's a unique, I think that just by that very nature, it's a unique how we do partner with our industry in that to provide those experiential experiences for our students. And then just a couple other ideas on how we do that. And I'm a huge fan of advisory councils. And I know most academic units do have an advisory council. Made up of industry professionals in that city or in that region. And we are lucky that we have three councils, and we're actually adding our fourth one in a couple of weeks. And at least once a semester, we come together. We usually have some sort of a student interaction activity. And we really ask our industry council to review our curriculum, to make sure that we're staying up to date, to hear what some of their challenges are, to foster that connection. So I think that's another way we've attempted to facilitate that interaction between faculty members and or between the academy as well as industry. And then just my third idea, a couple of years ago, we started a faculty internship program. Huge advocate of this. This has been very successful, and I hope we can amplify that program where members of our faculty actually spend some time in industry. A couple of summers ago, we had two faculty members spend time actually in breweries. And then they learn what's going on, some of the processes, some of the new skills, take that content and then apply it back to, you know, the brewery operation courses that they actually teach. So I'm a huge fan of those faculty internships, and I hope we can continue, you know, amplifying that program. So those are a couple of ways that I and we have tried to, you know, kind of facilitate this interaction, because we have to work together.
Oh, I so agree. And what one, you're in a location with some amazing industries that you can interact with. And what a great job of being proactive. And I love the faculty internship, because I truly believe, and this is my personal opinion, that you have to have industry knowledge if you're preparing students to go into an industry. So you have to have worked in that industry. And sometimes we have academics that haven't had that opportunity. So providing that is absolutely innovative and so strategic.
Yeah. Thank you. I agree with all of your comments. And I think too, from a chair or academic leader perspective, then it's finding the space and the time, the support for those opportunities in already a very busy academic year. But yeah, I think that's very important that we do provide our faculty with those opportunities to get out into industry and work. And I actually learned that skill from my time at Walt Disney World. Disney was very passionate about getting their leaders who maybe traditionally just had an office job into the field in full costume days, where they're actually interacting with guests, where they're walking around with a custodial pan and broom and taking out trash or serving guests in a busy restaurant. So then they have that knowledge and expertise on what it's like to be in the frontline environment. So I actually picked up that skill from Disney. And yeah, just a great example of how we can continue to partner with the industry.
Oh, that is so great. And yeah, and bringing that experience from Disney in is invaluable, because as people move up the leadership chain, sometimes they don't realize, if they haven't had those experiences, they don't understand.
Yeah, definitely.
The line is going through. Oh, yes. And sometimes it's hard to create those industry connections and challenges and bringing relevant information from industry into the academic space. And so how have you dealt with those types of challenges?
Yeah, very much. I think one of the biggest challenges is that industry and academic programs, the academy, we often have different visions and different strategic plans and different goals, right? Industry is primarily focused on a for-profit, right? Increasing the shareholder wealth of stakeholders, right? In higher education, we're all about creation of new knowledge and educating our students. So I think in that way, we often have different missions or different goals, and that's okay, right? So then I think how we do that is we focus on the commonalities of each of our organizations. Like in my earlier example, we educate students, create new knowledge for our industry, and then industry, right, looks to us for workforce development and new knowledge and solving some of the challenges in industry. And I think another challenge too, this has been going on for decades. It's just, we often have a natural mistrust of each other, right, of the academy and then kind of industry. And we'll have to look to others, or we could probably have our own podcast and discussion on why that actually is. But I think that has been going on for decades and for generations. So I think to solve that often natural mistrust is we have to focus on the relationship building aspect. And we all know that takes time, it takes effort, it takes resources to do that. I think we're very lucky in the hospitality and tourism industry. We're all about service and providing good experiences for our students or for our customers. So I'll give you an example. This Tuesday evening, going out for a beverage with a couple of folks from industry, and you know, I'm bringing some faculty members so we can have an informal discussion off premise, right? Just for that one-on-one, or not necessarily one-on-one, but for kind of a small group discussion. So I think in that, it's just, you know, becoming a little more intentional. And often we have to plan our stuff out months in advance. Everyone is so busy right now. So I think it's just very intentional in terms of our planning. We do our absolute best to plan our industry advisory council meetings at least a year out. We send meeting notifications, so we get those on the calendar. And I think, you know, one other opportunity I think with our industry partners is we need to continue to, I call this, develop like our pipeline of our relationships. So often a faculty member will have an interaction with an industry professional and maybe at an association meeting. Then we kind of plan out that journey and how we interact, right, with that partner. We may invite them in for a guest speaker opportunity. They may have great content and up-to-date knowledge to share with students. And then maybe, right, in another semester, we go on a site visit to their employer or to their site. And then next step is we invite them to be one of our industry councils. So we continue that pipeline of relationships. And I think we almost need to map that out in a little more formal basis. All right. And then eventually maybe we ask them for a small gift, if it's either financially or to support a lab or support some other resource. So to have that pipeline of industry relationships, I think we need to continue to do that. But yeah, look, there's a lot of challenges, I think, in kind of building those relationships, but it takes time. It takes a trust and maybe a beverage in an off-campus environment.
Oh, Eric, you just described one of the reasons why I so love working with you.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Well, the idea of mapping out that journey with industry partners, and I think you can do that with all types of stakeholders. You can do that with your students.
Definitely.
You know, I've had some conversations with people over time doing that with students, mapping out the journey with the student before they get to campus and then after they've graduated. Thank you for that, because that's such a wonderful example of really being thoughtful and thinking about mapping out, planning, which then ends up with very positive results.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I completely agree with you. We're having conversations as a faculty in the department about our advising structure. And that's actually a tool that we engaged in, is how do we actually kind of mapped out that student experience journey, right? And marketers do this all the time with customers and right? Essentially, how do customers interact at various touch points with a brand or a company? And it's the best tool that anyone can actually use, or any organization with any stakeholder, and kind of map out how students are interacting with advising on everything from the classroom to what classes they should take, to graduation, to looking at grad school, to looking at industry jobs. So we're having that conversation right now. And I'm a big fan of that. It takes a little time, but we get some folks together and visually map that out, because you do find those areas of opportunity for an operation or for an organization.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. That is really great. And I love the fact that you said customers, because I have been in meetings throughout my 30 years in academia that students are not customers. Well, then what are they? There's so many great customer service models out there.
That's right.
We embrace them and then bring them into academia so that we can treat people well and help them meet their goals. So thank you for.
Yeah, I think you're right. And not only customers, but also other stakeholders. I know at MSU Denver, about 40 to 50% of our students are first generation students. So we're having conversations. How do we interact with parents, right, who are very critical to make those decisions about university selection or program selection? So I think that mapping tool can be done, right, in a wide variety of different stakeholders. Future employers, what is their expectations? What does their journey look like with their interaction, you know, with a department or a university?
Yeah. Oh, again, yes, just reasons why I really loved working with you.
Oh, that's very, very kind of you.
You brought up some projects that you worked on, and maybe I think it'd be interesting to dive into the new brewery. And how did that come about? How does it relate with the academic goals and the industry partners? That's just fabulous.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to expand upon that project. And that project has been, I think the inspiration has been going on for several years. So I do need to recognize several stakeholders that were involved even before I got here at MS Denver. So we have four formal academic programs. And one of the programs is actually called Brewery Operations. As everyone knows, Denver is a beer town, a brewery town. We lead the country and the world with all of our fantastic beer options. This has been going on for, as we all know, hundreds of years. So we have a rich culture in our community of beer. And I would also expand that for beverages as well. So the source of this inspiration was really with conversations with industry, and how do we provide those rich experiential experiences so our students know what it's like to create a new product and to facilitate that product, and other skills in that area, quality control and product development, right? Beer was often about marketing and kind of the brand that's affiliated with that beverage, as well as the distribution channels. So in conversations, again, this has been going on for several years. with our, we do have a, one of our advisory councils is our Brewery Operations Advisory Council. And you can imagine those are fantastic meetings, right? The council is absolutely fantastic. We come together once a semester, and it was really to provide that rich opportunity for an experience. Here at MSU Denver, we do have another brewery on campus called the Tivoli Brewery, which is right in our student union. And we've had a great relationship with Tivoli in terms of site visits and internships and other experiential learning environments. About 4 or 5 years ago, we started a beverage analytics lab within the School of Hospitality. So we've been analyzing beverages. So I think, and then some space actually became available within our building. And so we started having those conversations with our industry council, other stakeholders, as well as a leadership, academic leadership here at MSU Denver, and then fully kind of building that up. Of course, we needed some fundraisers and some fundraising efforts to support that. And the construction started maybe about 15 months ago and finished in last fall. Last September was actually our grand opening of that space. So it's a 2.5-barrel system. The space is so beautiful. It just looks stunning. And then we added kind of a bar on the outside there that's right next, very near, very adjacent to our restaurant called Degree Restaurant. Students, and we're building this up, but students will be able to serve the beers, get feedback, do a sensory analysis, make changes in that space. And then our next phase of this project is the space is actually located to some nice outdoor area. So to create maybe like a mini beer garden and to have some spaces that we can enjoy that beverage on the outside there. So that's some of the story. And we also engaged, the lab was actually named after kind of a beer pioneer in our field called Charlie Pepazin, who's really a founder of the home brewing movement all the way back to the 1970s. So he was very instrumental in terms of helping us raise funding and capital for that, for the beer lab. And I do want to recognize too, Denver is a beer town, but there's a large percentage of folks that do not drink beer and alcohol. So we do respect that. And even industry does as well. We've seen a lot of growth in kind of the non-alcoholic or low alcoholic beverages right on the market. And speak of innovation, that we're seeing a lot of new product development and innovation there. As a result, our students do engage in producing some non-alcoholic beverages as well. It's a very exciting time, I think, for the industry. And our, you know, again, our lab is there to provide those opportunities for our students to learn those skills that they will need in industry.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I also like that the students are engaging in the evaluation and the analysis and sensory evaluation. I mean, just getting that full range of experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we're very fortunate that we are able to sell our beer now in the Degree Restaurant. And we're looking at opportunities right for the future. And then those funding or the sales or the revenue from that then will be used to support the lab and student experiential experiences. And I have to throw out too, we're very good at the collaboration effort. We have 4 academic programs, but our meeting and event folks often creates capstone experiential events. And we will partner with our beverage or our brewery operations folks to be on site, creating a beer or a beverage, serving that beer at that meeting or event. So we're extremely collaborative. Last semester, a couple of faculty members actually had a beer and food class, right? So we had a culinary expert. I will give a shout out to Dr. Jennifer Watson, who did finish her PhD at Iowa State University. And then we had fantastic beer instructor, Katie Strain, came together for this class. It's just a great example of collaboration. And I would say I'm extremely very innovative for the academic program.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, collaboration is really a keystone for innovation. And wow. And I know many of your faculty too, and I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah.
That is just fabulous that they are working together to bring some new experiences for students too, and across all areas. And I love that the event management is working with different programs to, again, provide great experiences for your students. Oh, wow.
Definitely. Yeah.
Also, as we think about collaboration and academia, academia sometimes this view that we're within the ivory towers and we just work within our walls. I mean, you've provided some amazing examples today of how those walls are broken down and, you know, working outside of academia and how important it is. But also, you've had the opportunity to work globally in many cases. And that's something that throughout your career I've been able to watch is your global collaborations. And one of your most recent was to be a Fulbright Scholar, which is quite a prestigious honor, one that you have to apply for and be selected. And you did a project in Hanoi, Vietnam. So would you talk to us about that?
Yeah, definitely. I was very fortunate that my initial inspiration for the Fulbright actually started at Iowa State University. And this is before the pandemic. There, the Iowa State University hosted some folks from Fulbright to come and speak and, you know, about the program. And I always knew I wanted to do something in that global international sense. By very nature, our industry, hospitality and tourism, is a global field, right? We're just that. By the very nature. And I also think we have a lot to learn from each other. And that's the heart of the Fulbright. It's cultural exchange, right? Where we can learn from others. We can share our knowledge with others as well. So I want to maybe just tell you a little bit about my university that I was there. Vinh University is a private university, started about 4 years ago in Hanoi. And they received some funding and some backing from Vinh Corporation, which is a huge conglomerate in Vietnam, and they are in hospitality, they're in transportation, they're in real estate and in education. And just as a little side note, Vinh started selling their cars and motorbikes actually in California a couple of years ago. So we're definitely going to hear a little more about Vinh in the United States in the next couple of years. And then Vinh was a source of inspiration for this university, and they reached out to Cornell University, and Cornell assisted with some of the academic programs. So traditionally, higher education in Vietnam tends to be a little segregated. So you will have the University of Business Economics here, and then another side, maybe the university, the medical university. So Vinh takes more of that American philosophy where all academic programs are under one building for really that source of collaboration and innovation. So the College of Business and Management is right next to engineering, to have those kind of water cooler talks as that source of inspiration for our collaboration. And the building design is just incredible, very focused on innovation. There's an innovation entrepreneurship lab, rather. There are spaces that are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where students and faculty can come together to have those discussions. So in terms of my Fulbright, I had three areas of focus. The first of which is I did teach a class. I taught a course in customer experience while there for undergraduate students. And then I did engage in a research scholarship project focused on stakeholders in tourism in Hanoi. And then that third area, I was very fortunate to do some traveling throughout Vietnam where I could share some experience of customer service and international collaboration with different audiences throughout Vietnam at other universities and other association events. So those are the three areas of focus for my research project while I was there. I was very fortunate that I didn't have support from my current institution to do that. And yeah, just very fortunate for that experience. And I hope all faculty and others can participate in that experience.
Oh, and it's great that, of course, you know, you have to have these clearly defined objectives and goals. And but were there any surprises or anything that you experienced that you're like, wow, I did not expect this?
Yeah, as far as the Fulbright, I was very fortunate that I had incredible experience and incredible support for the Fulbright. I think my research project, we're having conversations, it's a qualitative inquiry with different stakeholders in the tourism ecosystem. I think there's a couple of key findings that are stemming from some preliminary results in that area. The first of which is we do see this a lot with our stakeholders, that often our stakeholders don't talk to each other. They don't have those conversations. And stakeholders in tourism, this is everyone from entrepreneurs to tour operators to educators to the government to destination marketers. Often these folks, right, just don't have those conversations with each other. Because we all know in that tourism ecosystem, you interact with a wide variety of different stakeholders, tour operators and folks at hotels and restaurants and attractions and airlines or other channels of transportation. So I think that's one kind of major finding from the stakeholder discussion. And I think educators or universities have a role to play in that, for being that platform of bringing diverse stakeholders together. In Vietnam, there's about 6 or 7 hospitality and tourism programs. And I think they really have that opportunity to continue to bring all these folks together for, if it's conferences or for platforms of discussion or interaction in classrooms. I think that's one major surprising that I'm just finding. It was very fun to be in Vietnam. Again, this was a year ago during the spring of 2023. Traditionally, the major international suppliers of tours to Vietnam were China, the United States, and South Korea. During COVID, that changed a lot. So it was very interesting to see how Vietnam actually responded. Everyone was impacted, right, of course, by COVID and closure of borders and other challenges. Vietnam really turned that around and really repositioned themselves as a domestic tourism destination. So even today, about 80 to 85% of all tourism in the country is actually domestic tourism, which is really interesting. And as a result, the country has been very innovative with new airline pathways and new airlines that have been added to that mix in the last couple of years. With the emerging of a middle class in Vietnam, there's new attractions, new water parks and amusement park and theme parks focused on families and new aquariums and new malls. So just that infrastructure has really been developed in the last couple of years. So it's an exciting time, I think, for tourism in Vietnam. And it's just a beautiful country, about the same size as our beautiful state of Colorado, but about 100 million people that do live there. It's a very long country, and you can get anywhere in the country by flight within about 2 hours, and which, you know, I think most folks would say that's pretty accessible. And it's interesting, in the United States, we often have to book our flights months in advance, right, to get that best deal. In Vietnam, you can often book at the last minute or even show up at the airport to get, you know, a flight. So that was fun and innovative in a way. But yeah, those are just some of the surprises that I, as a result of my experience that I found in Vietnam.
I love it. And that focusing on domestic tourism, that is really innovative, because oftentimes when we are in conversations with people, different locations, they're like, oh yeah, I've not been to places within my own country or my own state. And that's really great. And it sounds like they just really have put that infrastructure together quickly. Wow.
Absolutely. Even in our beautiful country, the United States, 50 states and all the different national parks and different regions and different culinary areas and different attractions is a huge source of inspiration for domestic tourism. And I think that is something that we did learn from the pandemic as well. Even our great state of Colorado, outdoor recreation, our national parks really did increase during the pandemic. Yeah, it's just another source of source.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. So is there one experience that you had there that was like your most memorable, that you're like,
yeah,
wow, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity? It doesn't have to relate to industry or academia. It might have been, you know, a tourism experience, but was there just
sure.
something?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple examples. Again, very life-changing for me, I think, for doing that Fulbright in Vietnam, just having the space to, I think, step away from your traditional day-to-day responsibilities, just have a little more time to think and engage and have conversations with folks. So maybe just a couple quick stories. In Vietnam, higher education and teaching is held to a very high regard there. And it was very fun. After every lecture in a classroom, students clap. And it was very nice and very humbling and very fun. And I would often return that applause to students, right, in a classroom. Vietnam, I think from a tourism perspective, is a younger destination. A lot of innovation and a lot of entrepreneurship. Folks are very interested in international tours. Children will come up to you all the time and practice their English speaking skills. So it's very fun to engage with a wide variety of different folks. And just maybe another story. On a holiday in Vietnam, I was just out by myself for my daily walk. And there's a group of Vietnamese that were having a picnic. And they actually invited me over to have some great food, and we were not able to communicate verbally, but we were able to use Google Translate for translations. And just, it's very nice. And just to have that interaction with folks are always interested, I think, in international tours and why I was there. And such. Yeah. And had some incredible Vietnamese food too, which is great. Yeah. I think those are just a couple memorable experiences I had in the classroom and out of the classroom.
Oh, that's great. And I wanted just dig a little bit deeper into the idea of not being able to speak fluently with everyone. And sometimes that's for people that is a barrier for traveling internationally, that a fear of not being able to communicate in the language of the country. And I've spent quite a bit of time in countries that I have not been able to fluently communicate. But there always seems to be that, honey, we're humans. And there's still that connection and body, nonverbal communication, smiles, and just...
You're right, Yolanda. I think for a lot of folks, the language barriers can be very, very discerning and very challenging and a huge roadblock. I think you hit it on the head. I think at the heart, we are all humans, and a smile can go a very long way, and nonverbal communication and taking selfies, right, with each other or photographs can be one way to overcome that. And I would also add too, we are living in a global age of communication, I believe. The numerous apps that are out there. I mentioned Google Translate, but there are a wide variety of other different apps, even getting around Vietnam, Uber or Lyft, not as prevalent, but they have their own application called Grab, and it can all be done in English. And when reserving a vehicle or getting food, or we had a mattress delivered via apps. So it's very fun and very interesting. And you know, I think too, just a little patience goes a long way. Traveling abroad can be very stressful, and jet lag and different aspects of that. But you're right. At the heart, we're all human, and that human connection will never go away.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that answer. And I hope people will, you know, take that opportunity or seek out opportunities for international travel if they're residents of the United States, because it is life-changing. And
yeah, absolutely. Yep, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Oh, but you have so many things going on. What are some of the future projects that you're working on or that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about my experience in Fulbright in Vietnam. I'm actually going back to Vinh University in about 5-6 weeks or so. I'm actually teaching a class in consumer experience there. And then I'm teaching the same class for students here at Metropolitan State University of Denver. So in theory, that is the scope. So I'm traveling there for a couple of weeks and then coming back to facilitate the class. But we're teaching the same class at two institutions. And I hope to bring in those or foster those conversations. Both students are very interested in learning more about the student experience from the international perspective. And I have a few guest speakers from both the United States and Vietnam in hospitality and in tourism to share their experiences. So I think that's at the forefront. I'm super excited about that. And then I want to give a little shout out about some of the interesting things my faculty, our faculty here are doing, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah. But I just want to ask one question in your class. Is it going to be synchronous or taught at the same time at both institutions?
We'll be doing a couple of things here. It's going to be a combination of async and synchronous. We have a 13-hour time difference, which is not ideal, but we will be making it work. So for example, a guest speaker may be coming in the evening, which would be in the morning, right, in Vietnam. So it'll be a combination of both.
Oh, great.
And synchronous. So
The students will get to interact with each other too.
That's right. Yes. Yep.
Love it.
Yeah. So finalizing the details of that class. And again, of course, barriers, right? Technology, time differences. But I'm convinced that I think it's going to be a great learning experience for me as an educator and also for our students. And happy to do another little conversation about that, how that works out in a couple of months. But super excited about that opportunity.
Yes, we'll have to have you back on the podcast for us to follow up on this. So yes, please give us
some of our faculty members. I think I'm very proud in some of the great, interesting things they're doing in the classroom. We're talking a little bit about how we can partner with industry. About a year and a half ago, a couple of our faculty members became very interested in teaching in the metaverse. So we actually have two professors and two classes where students and the faculty member are engaging in that classroom through virtual reality headsets. I think that's a really innovative way to facilitate education. And in industry, it's all about training and professional development. And I hope we can share some insight in that area. Our faculty members are also engaging in research, of course, in AI, where that is going. I'm very excited with that. And several of our faculty members actually received a grant to create open educational resources or low-cost resources to implement right in the classroom to reduce some of the barriers and the expenses of textbooks and other resources. Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to a few of our faculty members who are engaging in some really innovative research in the classroom and then also out of the classroom. And then lastly, I was very impacted by my time on the Fulbright, and I want to continue to educate, faculty members in our industry, what the Fulbright is all about. Fulbright has a database of all those that have done a Fulbright, and surprisingly, there's a dearth of hospitality and tourism academics that have participated right in the Fulbright. And that's, surprising, since we're such a global and international industries. At ICRE this summer, several colleagues and I will be presenting a workshop on how to chat, educate, and be a source of inspiration for others that may be considering the Fulbright. So I want to add that to my area of kind of scholarship as well, just getting the word out about the program.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, now that you bring that up, there are not a lot of hospitality, tourism, event management individuals doing Fulbrights. Yeah, kudos to you for helping to pass that forward and support those initiatives. My.
Thank you. Yeah. Again, there have been a handful, and we're slowly coming together to have that conversation. How do we get the word out about the program, and how do we help those to create an application and then find another institution throughout the world that can assist them. So super excited about that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do you have any advice for students or young professionals who are looking to make a meaningful impact in hospitality, tourism, event management?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. I think a couple of pieces of advice for students in our field. I'm a huge, huge advocate of getting involved in professional associations. We're very lucky that there are quite a few different associations in our field. Most of them have a regional or even a city-specific group. I find those experiences of interacting with professionals, engaging in professional development opportunities, workshops, or hearing newest trends, networking, right, with professionals in our field, is one of the biggest pieces of advice. We all know what it's like to be a student, right, and to try to find our way in industry or find a career path or an organization that aligns with maybe my core values. So I think that's just a great way for engaging with industry. And often student memberships are pretty reasonable in terms of funding. A lot of departments do provide support for engaging creation of student clubs underneath that professional association umbrella. So I'm just a huge believer in professional associations. I have seen students get internships, get jobs as a result of going to those industry association meetings. So I'm a big believer in that. And the other aspect, my advice is maybe for folks who are not in our hospitality and tourism academic fields. And I know maybe that sounds a little surprising, but our field is absolutely incredible. No matter what your major, your previous experience, there's going to be a room for you in our field. I'll use my experience while working at the Walt Disney World Resort. It's my first major role outside of an undergraduate school. Down in Orlando, there are 60 to 70,000 different types of jobs. Everything from human resources to engineering to maintenance to marketing to brand to folks that deal with the animals to folks that create incredible landscapes and plants, and again, traditional business fields as well, operations and HR, marketing, finance, accounting. No matter what your background is, there's a spot for you in our field. So I think that's my piece of advice for maybe folks who are not looking at hospitality and tourism as a major or a minor, but there's a field or an opportunity for you in our field.
Oh, thank you for saying that, because I became more familiar with the hospitality, tourism, event management industries when I was a department chair that had those programs within it. And then I realized, no, this has been part of my life always. I've had family members that have worked directly in the industry, that have started businesses in the industry. And then as you're talking about Colorado, I was reflecting back on growing up there. You had no choice but to be part of the tourism industry. And then I had a father who thought he, I think, worked for, I would say, the Colorado Chamber of Commerce, because anytime anyone came to Colorado to visit us, Leon Sanders was Mr. Tourism and just spoke he spoke positively and gave tours to people, brewery tours, of course, on that list, but also national parks. And just, and so it is, as you said, it's such an amazing, impactful, and important group of industries for human, both psychological and physical well-being. And there's so many jobs and positions. And
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. Our field, we bring people together for a meeting or an event or for training or for a beverage, a sporting event, holiday with friends or family. And I think our ecosystem, it touches upon all disciplines. So our field is very strong. We learned a lot during the pandemic. A lot of innovation. But at the heart, we bring people together, and that will never go away.
It will never go away. And the pandemic showed us how important it is for people to be together.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Definitely.
So we've come to this point in the podcast where I ask the question, how do you define innovation?
Innovation. Yeah. That's a great question. And I was doing a little reflection on innovation without Googling the word innovation. So here's my definition. Let's see if it makes sense. I think it's a process of creating value for a stakeholder. Again, that stakeholder could be a student, a fellow faculty member, academic program, industry, government, nonprofit, community member, in order to solve some sort of a problem or a challenge. And I think how we create that value, right? The product, a service, or an idea. But then when I was thinking about that to me, that definition I just gave you, that's like product innovation. So I want to expand that. I think that the innovation aspect is when we create that value, right? Or that new product, service, or idea, it has to be through some sort of a new framework or through some sort of a new paradigm. And that could be through some sort of a new theoretical framework that I hadn't thought of before. It could be some sort of an inspiration while living abroad. So I think that's what separates innovation from maybe just like product development. It has to be creating that source of value through some sort of a new lens, new framework, new geographical area, new idea, interaction with others. To me, that's what innovation is.
Well, thank you for that definition, and thank you for this insightful conversation and for sharing your knowledge with us and your experiences in academia and industry and as a Fulbright scholar. Just really appreciate your insights. And so thank you for being here with us today, Dr. Olson.
Thank you. A pleasure is mine. And yeah, I greatly enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for having me.
To our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the Innovation Insights podcast. Today's podcast highlighted the importance of blending academic research with practical industry applications and underscored the significance of global perspectives in enriching our understanding and practices in hospitality and tourism. We hope that you leave this episode inspired to explore new ways to innovate, collaborate, and make a difference in your own fields. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform for more thought-provoking discussions with leaders and innovators across various industries. Thank you again, Dr. Olson, for joining us today and for your significant contributions to the industry and academia. I am Dr. Yolanda Sanders, and I'm signing off until next time. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.